Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of In The Zone. This is episode 201 today. I'm Giancarlo Alino, there's Chris Martelli, and Chris, we got to kick it off with the World Cup because this is probably some of the craziest matches I've seen, especially in a tournament format. We're seeing upsets all over the place. Just yesterday, we saw what happened. Just games going to penalties, drama, circus. Croatia, Argentina get the job done. What are your thoughts about these two games?
Man, I don't know if it's because of the lack of training or the lack of exposure for these like teams facing each other, but there have been upsets everywhere in this World Cup. I loved the Croatia game yesterday. I thought that was, to me, both games were entertaining as hell, but I think just the way that, you know, they go up 1-0 in extra time, Neymar with the beautiful goal, and then all of a sudden, I don't know what the hell happened. It's like they kind of just cruised, and then Croatia just being that resilient group that just never, they're never out of it. They come back, score late in the game, and then penalties come. You don't want to face that Croatian goalie in penalties. That guy just, he's been phenomenal all tournament. Alino, I got to ask you this because it kind of bothered me the way that they laid out their format for the penalties in terms of the kickers. Why did Neymar go fifth? And like, why, when you have a guy like Neymar, why are you not having him shoot first? Because we saw Messi shoot first for Argentina. If you're in that situation, Alino, aren't you putting your best player first?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this up too, because I think they hung Marquinhos out there to dry, poor guy. Like, the whole narrative now is going to be that he let Brazil down. He cost them a World Cup, and he's a center back. Like, this guy shouldn't be the one stepping up to take penalties when you have a team so offensively gifted like Brazil. And you saw what Messi did for Argentina. He goes first. I think Neymar should have gone either first or second just to set the tone, make everyone comfortable that if it gets to center backs, you at least give them the confidence. Like, look, we scored, get a pattern going of where this goalie likes to go. But to me, I think that just set him up for failure. And you have Neymar possibly shooting fifth. Like, once you're down in penalties, you don't have any opportunity. Like, glory hunting goes out the window, I think. Like, Neymar should have stepped up. Maybe should have said, you know, I'm shooting now. We need a goal here and protect the center back. But that was pretty bad that they went with the center back over Neymar.
Yeah, even the substitutions leading up to, you know, everything that happened. I know Vinny didn't have the best game. I'm not taking him off in the 65th minute. They took Richarlison off. I mean, the guy has been a top 15 player in the tournament for me, and you take him off. And those are two offensive guys that you need in a penalty shootout. And again, like, we saw Messi go, he kicked it. We saw Modric go, he kicked it. We saw, you know, what's his name there on the Netherlands, their best player. He went up, he kicked it. All the best players had the opportunity to kick it. Neymar did not have the opportunity because I guess they wanted to have the glory, that glory spot where, hey, he already tied Pele for the most goals. Why not send them to end it with Neymar? I just think it was a bad move. I maybe would have kept Vinny or Richarlison out there, one of them, for the penalties. You have Neymar kick it off. You have Richarlison second or third. And then maybe you have, I don't know, like maybe one of those guys like I'm trying to remember his name. He was the guy that scored in the penalty. Casemiro. You have him go like fourth or third, and I think that would have set the tone. But Mark, like you said it perfectly, a fullback going in there shooting fourth. It's just not. It wasn't a good spot for him. And you know, we saw Croatia, man. Like they have it in them. Last World Cup was the same story. They go advanced through penalties. This team is resilient. I mean, Alino, I want to talk more about our group because, again, we're from Canada. I did not expect both Morocco and Croatia to be in the final eight. And I thought, honestly, Alino, I thought Belgium and Canada would be the two teams to advance. So what have your thoughts been with those two specific teams? Because Morocco has been an absolute nightmare to play. They've conceded one goal in the tournament. And then, of course, you see Croatia. It's just crazy.
Yeah, like I think if you're Canada, just the men's national team, you can hold your head a little higher now. Like, you know what? Maybe it wasn't so bad. Like, everybody talking about some of the other groups being so tough and the group of death, and maybe Spain and Germany were the two. But you look at Canada's group, who they had to deal with, Croatia, who's now in the semifinal, back-to-back World Cups, and a Moroccan team that, as we're talking, is one up on Portugal, probably going to go to the semifinal. And you had Belgium with like two world-class players like De Bruyne and Hazard. So I don't feel too bad if I'm Canada. Like, you showed what you can do at this level. Maybe you're not as further along as you would have hoped, but you're also not too far back as maybe some analysts put you out to be. So I think for Canada, it's a good result that they managed to hang around against Belgium and Morocco. And Croatia was a different story, but I think the coach had something to do with that. Maybe if he didn't come out and said what he said, Croatia wouldn't have been so fired up to do that. So I would be happy as Canada.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, it's experience too. It's going to be, we're going to be one of the host nations for the next World Cup. So I think we got to keep our heads held high. I think, I don't want to bash CONCACAF by any means, but I think our federation has to be a little bit better in terms of, like, when you're talking about qualifying, maybe have Canada go off and face, like, go on a European road trip and face a couple European teams. So when you get ready for the World Cup and you take on these European teams, you don't get absolutely boat raced, because we saw that with Croatia. They get all excited. They're up 1-0. They've never played a team, Alino, especially a European team that's as tactical and has just so much resilience as Croatia. So we saw firsthand, they go up 1-0 and then they literally changed their game plan, Croatia. And it's like, we literally bowed to them and they just killed us. So I think CONCACAF in some way, now that we know that CONCACAF is going to be hosting this World Cup, maybe you talk to FIFA and say, hey, why don't we, why doesn't Mexico, USA, Canada, the teams that we know are probably going to be in the World Cup, why don't they go off and have like a 8-game European road trip? They face teams like Belgium, Italy, maybe Spain, just, you know, just to see how they can do against these teams. Because if you're going to go into a World Cup blinded, you're taking on these European teams, chances are, Alino, the CONCACAF is not going to succeed.
Yeah, and the one good thing I think with CONCACAF is some of their teams get invited to play in Copa America, like the States have in the past, and I think there's talks right now of Canada being in the next one in Copa America, so that would put them in that situation. We play teams like Argentina, Brazil, like Venezuela, like some of those teams, and I think if they continue to do that, it could raise a level, but their whole qualification process needs an overhaul. Like, you have an octagonal where they go in a round robin of eight. Before that, there's like another one. Like, everybody's just advancing to go to the next round robin. If they structure it a lot better, like Europe does and some of these other confederations, I think you could do something there. But I think they saw that, you know what, we have some talent on this side of the globe. And with MLS and Mexico doing their own like little World Cup tournament every year, Leagues Cup in July, I think that's positive. But I think they showed that maybe in a couple years, in 2026, when they all host, they can shock the world there.
Yeah, we got to wait and see, man. I'm excited for it.
Just pulling this up here because as we're talking, Morocco are up 1-0. 8 minutes of stoppage time now. So Portugal don't score in the next 6 minutes, Ronaldo could be going home. Just what are your thoughts on just the way Ronaldo's been treated, it seems, from the media? Because I know he has done it to himself, but do you think it's going overboard of how much is being bashed in the media?
I think when you're a player of his caliber, and he's been doing it for, I think, so 18 years now, I saw today he has 196 international cap, tied for the FIFA record. So like, the guy's been doing it forever, Alino. And when you have expectations, like with what Ronaldo brings and, you know, what happened with Manchester United and basically just outing the whole franchise and how there haven't been changes, I think he's done it to himself, but at the same time, they got to maybe just ease it a bit. He's 37 years old. We all know that Father Time is undefeated. He's still amazing. He's still probably a top three player on Portugal, but he's not the best player anymore on the team. I think Bruno Fernandes is probably better. I think Leao has been incredible this year for Milan. Like, there's just guys, I think, that are just, they outshine Ronaldo. And I think the fan base, it's hard, man. Like, look at what LeBron James goes through. Like, if he has a bad game or a bad season, they're all over him all year. So guys like Ronaldo, guys like LeBron, who've been doing it forever, man, you have a little bit of a slump or a little bit of a regression, the media's going to be all over that. So I'm not really surprised with the way they've been treating Ronaldo. I just think once everybody realizes that he's gone forever, they're going to miss his presence, because that guy's an absolute game breaker. He has been his whole career. And if this is Ronaldo's last game with Portugal, that's a headline in itself.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, it's different from Messi, because like Messi joined Mbappe and Neymar in PSG. He didn't go there to be the savior. He's going there to be a part of that group to maybe bring him a Champions League, hopefully, because of all the money they spent. But it's like Ronaldo, he goes to Manchester United, and it's like he's expected to be that guy, and he's expecting them to also in turn build a team around him, which at this stage of his career, you can't do that. But I think it's going to be tough. Now, he's going to Saudi Arabia by all rumors, so he's going to get a nice little payday, $500 million for 2 years. So wow. I don't think he'll be too sad. But do you think he'll be back in the next World Cup?
No, I don't think so, man. Like, he'll be 41 years old. I don't think so. If anything, maybe like a coach. I don't know. I don't see him. If he is back there, honestly, Alino, he's probably going to play like 20 minutes every game, not even. So I think if he wants to break the cap record, maybe you do it. Maybe he'll play in the Euro Cup and break the record. But I don't see him going for another World Cup, man. It's unfortunate because that's the one trophy he's always wanted to win. But I don't know, man. It's not looking good right now with Morocco up with 2 minutes left.
Yeah, Morocco up there. And
they're probably just booting the ball out every time they get it. They just
get out. I saw a red card being shown too. So I don't know if Portugal have a man advantage, but yeah, time's ticking there. But in the semifinal, one bracket though that we have confirmed is Croatia and Argentina. They both had some nail biters getting to the semis. Who do you got going through? And I guess, can Croatia shock the Argentina here?
Yeah, they can. I think this, if there's one thing we've learned now with Croatia is, yeah, you know, they're old, but sometimes tactical football is the best football. And I think when you think of an organized team, they're the definition of it. Like Brazil, as great as they are, they're not a unbelievable organized team. They're all just wonder kids. They're great offensive talents. But then you look at Croatia. Modric had the game of his life yesterday. I thought, you know, at times he showed his age in the tournament, didn't have the greatest game against Canada, didn't have the greatest game against Belgium. But, you know, when it matters most, the guy came out and he showed out against Japan and he showed out against Brazil. So I think as the tournament goes on, Alino, Modric just gets better. Guys like Perisic, he's clutch as hell too. And even Kramaric has been phenomenal for Croatia. And dude, if that goalie is going to be as good as he's been all tournament, Argentina is going to have to get a quick one if they want to win, because we all know that Croatia likes to park the bus and they like to just play that tactic game where, you know, they clog the middle. You don't necessarily use the wings all too often. And that's where Argentina strives. You know, they find Messi, they find Di Maria, they find all those guys on the wing. And they just try to make it happen. So if Martinez can get shut down, if Messi gets shut down, Croatia can win this game. And I still think Argentina is going to go, just based off the narrative of, you know, this is arguably Messi's last World Cup. And they went to the final in 2014, came up short to Germany. I think they're motivated. These are both, Alina, these are both World Cup finalists, the last two. So it's awesome to see that both these guys are still relevant, still going. If I had to make a prediction, Alino, I'm saying it's going to be 2-1 Argentina.
I think it would be nice. I want to see Croatia go back-to-back World Cups, a team you would least expect to go to the final. Even in 2018, they had a solid team that like Mandzukic off the bench, and then he was starting at times, and solid player. They don't have that kind of player now, but when people count them out, it would be a nice story if they can go back-to-back and not having the same level of talent of a Brazil or Argentina, but finding a way. I think it would be a nice story. But let's say if you're Saudi Arabia and you watch Argentina, let's say, win the World Cup, do you think that's an opportunity where you could just talk so much shit and be like, You know what? We were both at the same World Cup. Argentina won it. We beat Argentina. They may have won the World Cup, but they didn't beat us, type of thing.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, Saudi Arabia had arguably the greatest narrative the whole tournament, other than Morocco. Like, they literally beat Argentina, and Argentina might win the World Cup. So you get the Rolls Royce, you get the red carpet out, get the Ric Flair shades. They all have their heads held high because, hey, Saudi Arabia, at the end of the day, beat Argentina. And, hey, I remember when it was in the group stages, I'm like, is Argentina really not going to qualify here? Because that would just be a travesty. So thank God Argentina did and Saudi Arabia didn't. But what a narrative it was, El Lino. And they're definitely going to be pulling up in the Rolls Royces with the Ric Flair shades. Oh, my God.
Oh, just seeing the scenes here, Chris. You know what just happened?
Oh, they won.
It's all over.
Oh, no.
Oh, Morocco is in the semifinals of the World Cup. They did it. They just panned the camera there to Ronaldo, and it's over.
Wow. Your thoughts? Is he crying? Oh, dude, I don't know. Like, I'm really happy for Morocco because I was saying to you, this is exactly like Ghana in 2010. They went to the semifinal, or no, the quarterfinal, and they lost, you know, the whole Suarez incident. But, I mean, it was a hell of a story, hell of a run. Morocco, man, I can't believe it. This is incredible. I'm so happy for them. Portugal, eek, dude, they're really good on paper. Like, you look at Portugal on paper, Leao, Ruben Dias, Silva, Ronaldo, just so many guys. Dude, like, Renato Sanchez didn't even make the team. Like, jeez, like, and they're out. So, Pepe's finally retiring. Guy's 40 years old on the back end. So, I mean, I think at this point, Alino, it's England or France's tournament to lose at this point.
Man, this is crazy to see. Like, I know they, when the bracket came out, I'm sure if you're an organizer over there at the FIFA World Cup, you're thinking, oh, can we get Portugal and Argentina to the final? Can we just get Ronaldo, Messi, just some marketing dollars? And it just slipped through their fingers. So
I can't believe that.
There's probably so many people in advertising at FIFA just punching air right now, probably throwing something through a wall and hoping that at least Mbappe can go through. But Morocco have an opportunity to spoil that too. Even Croatia. Just imagine the numbers of Croatia, Morocco, or the final. Like, do you think that would be good for FIFA?
Hey, you know what? I think it would be great. Just again, narrative. Just these, you like, nobody gave these two teams a remote shot, and they're in the finals. Which it never happens in soccer, man. Like, the last time I remember something like that happening, what, again, it was a little fixed, but was Korea in 2002. That was the last time it was like, holy shit, like, this team has no business being in the finals. Like, I remember it was 06 when it was Sweden had their little run there with Ibrahimovic. Ukraine was okay. But there was never a team that literally was, like, in the final four that had no business being there. And I hate to say it, Morocco really has no business being in the final four. But here we are. You know, they work hard. Their goalie has just stepped up in a big way. The only thing is, Alino, their best defender just got hurt in this game. So I don't know if you're going to face a team like France or England, I don't know if, like, I don't want to say 3-0, but England scored 6 goals against Senegal. They scored 6 goals, or not, they scored 6 goals in the first game. They scored 3 goals easily against Senegal. I don't know, man. Like, England and France are two completely different monsters, but anything can happen.
Yeah, I think if I'm Morocco, I'm praying that England find a way to win, because at least there's, like, some matchups there with Harry Maguire that, if you get it tactically right, you might be able to go through. But France, Morocco, like, I think Mbappe's looking at that back line and, like, you know what, this could be a walk to the final. But you never know. Like, Morocco now, they eliminate one powerhouse or one of the favorites there in Portugal. Croatia, Morocco, two teams in Canada's group. In the final four. That's crazy.
That's unreal. Yeah, I can't believe that. Like, I thought Japan was a cool story, you know, going through and seeing how they, you know, they beat out when they beat Germany in the group stages. I thought, you know, it's a good story. But Morocco just elevated it. Croatia to me elevated it because I never thought Belgium would not make it. I just think, you know, you have De Bruyne, you have Lukaku coming back. They have Salamakers. They had just so many guys. Like, De Catalade was incredible. Joku didn't, I don't think he wasn't that good in this tournament, but they had weapons everywhere. And even Courtois, man, the guy's arguably a top five goalie since 2014, and you can't even make it through the group stage. And then all of a sudden, here's Croatia again knocking on the door. The average age of this group is like 32 years old, and they just keep going. And then there's Morocco. Like, you know, you have Hakimi, you have Ziyech, two guys that are world-class in my opinion, but I never thought it would be enough to let alone even make it through. So the fact that Morocco is just, you know, they just won. They beat Portugal, a powerhouse in my opinion. I would have loved to have seen Portugal versus England or Portugal versus France. I think that would have been a really, really great semifinal, but I think the narrative just trumps everything Portugal stood for. I love this Moroccan group. I love how motivated they are, how motivated Croatia is. And dude, I'm not going to lie to you. Netherlands, we've talked about it last pod, how we didn't really see them doing a lot of damage. To me, they surprised in this tournament. They looked really, really solid, the Netherlands.
Do you think Morocco can do what Greece did in 2004, be that underdog that no one expects to go to the final and just come up and win and surprise everybody here?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if they'll win it. I mean, if they can beat France or England, they should win it, but it's not as easy on Argentina either. Argentina is a team to me that I think is very underappreciated, specifically the last 4 years. Like 2014, they had a really good team. They lose in the finals because of Mario Götze in like the 115th minute. And then, you know, you hear the rumblings of Messi's retiring. So, I mean, you know, Argentina is a team I would never cancel out. England is the Leafs of soccer. They'll always disappoint at some point. I hate to say it. I'm an England fan. Just, it's in my blood. So at this point, Alino, if I had to predict a final, this is me being non-biased, I would say France and Argentina. But if I have to be biased here, I got to go with Argentina, England. I just think Morocco, it was a great story. I don't see them, specifically with their top defender now out, unless, again, their goalie goes full Ochoa mode, has like 15 saves, and they somehow win in penalties. So I'll still stick with the winner of France, England, probably winning it all. But, you know, if Argentina goes to the final, I'm low-key rooting for Messi to get a World Cup.
One good thing they do have at this World Cup now is a narrative in the final, because Morocco, they can be the first African team to win a World Cup. They're already first now African Final Four. If you got England, it could come home. That's another narrative. France, Mbappe, be a player back-to-back World Cups, go into that Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo category. Yeah. If you go to Messi, first World Cup for him, and Croatia, you got Modric. You can go back-to-back World Cup finals and win on the second attempt at 37, 38 years old. So nice stories coming out of this at least, but I low-key want to see Croatia, Morocco, just to see the reaction from FIFA there. So I'll have to wait and see on that. But we're going to move on here to some Toronto Maple Leaf action, because I don't know, I'm hearing it's silent on the haters of Mitch Marner and the media, I'm noticing. Like, ever since he went on this point streak, what happened to all the media members on some of the networks here in Canada saying he can't play, trade him, not worth the money? 21 games, he's proven that worth. What do you think of Mitch Marner?
To me right now, he's the best winger in all of hockey. I mean, Pasternak has something to say about that. I think Rantanen, I think Kane, I think Kucherov. But right now, Mitch Marner is the best right winger in all of hockey. 21-game point streak is not easy in this league. We saw Patrick Kane. He had 26 in 2015. He ended up winning the Hart, the Art Ross. We all know how great that season was for him. But the fact that Mitch Marner just continues to get a point every game, to me, is just, I've never seen it by a Leaf. This is the first time I've ever seen a Leaf just be so offensively consistent. yeah, you know, he doesn't have 40 points in the 21 game point streak. He's getting about, he's at what, 28 in the 21, but the all around game that he's playing, the two way abilities, blocking shots, he's coming down shorthanded, creating all these awesome opportunities. He's elevated Tavares's game this year. I love the way Mitch has played. I think, you know, he again cancels out the noise often, him and Matthews, and sometimes it doesn't work. But whatever Mitch Marner's been doing, just keep doing it, because he's outplayed Matthews this year so far, and I never thought I would be saying that.
That pass that he almost got Tavares on, that perfect pass when he was down on the ground, he falls to the ice off his ass, and he still passes it to Tavares, who gets a clear slap shot. If that went in, that's like some material that'd be used for highlight packs for the rest of his career, I think. Like, some of the plays he's able to do and the way he tracks back, even on the defensive end, just his ability. I think they could put him at I don't know if they could put him as a defenseman, like completely offensive defenseman, if they want to go that route. But on the power play, do you think they should maybe have Marner at the back and move Matthews in front of the net?
I think, yeah, it depends what matchup you have. If you really want to have Matthews be the OV of the power play and just up top waiting for the one-timer. Marner's a guy that could just move everywhere. He could cycle behind the net. He could just be up top trying to get the, you know, the defender to pinch up, try and go for him, do a nice saucer pass to Willie. I just think our power play is just so lethal because we have so many guys, Alino, that can just do it all. Tavares is the guy that's usually in front of the net, but if you give him space, he'll feed somebody. Willie the same. Matthews the same. It just sucks that we don't have Riley because he's the guy that's always up top. He's always having the D, the forward with the active stick coming up to pinch, saucing it to Marner, Marner finding either JT or Matthews, and it's in the back of the net. But if you really want to go with Rasmus Sandin, he's been playing really well. I think his confidence is at an all-time high. You have hit, Sandin has looked incredible. I think, you know, other than the few turnovers that he makes, he's a great defenseman. I think he's really come into his own as a player. But I do agree with you. I think if you put Marner up at the point for majority of the power play, you could have maybe Matthews in that wheelhouse, maybe at the hash marks. That guy might be scoring a lot more than he is right now. And Alino, Mitch Marner, starting to become more of a goal scorer. He has 10 goals in his point streak. And last year, it looked like he started to elevate his goal scoring ability. Do you see him potentially getting 40 goals?
I do. I see 40 goals as being a realistic target for him, especially the way he's playing now. I think if he, I don't want to say selfish, but if he gets in position where he's on the ice when there's an empty net, I think he could get some goals off there. Just the way he's so quick at just cutting through. And when you got guys pinching up when they take out the goalie, I think that's a perfect opportunity for Marner to get some goals. But right now, I would say 40, maybe even like a little over 40, like 42, 43, I think is a realistic target, only because Matthews has been slumping now. But I remember last season, Matthews had a little slump early on. He still went on pace to where he could have got almost 70 goals at one point. Just the pace he was on, he gets 60. So I think Matthews could still get in the 60 range if he starts getting hot.
Oh, yeah. I never count Matthews out for anything. The guy's a top five player in the league. Give this guy some space. Give him some opportunity. He's going to absolutely bury it. So Matthews is a guy where I think he's still kind of trying to adjust his game. I think he's trying to be more defensive. He's always been top five in takeaways every year, which just shows how great he is with his stick. But I think if Matthews can start elevating his game, this Leafs team is almost unstoppable. Because, I mean, I don't want to be that typical Leaf fan that says we're so good, we're a top three team. But, man, we haven't lost in regulation since October 31st. It's December 10th, man. We've been due for a loss for the last four games. I've said it every single game, and we don't lose. We have arguably the best goaltending tandem in the league, whereas early on in the year, TSN said we have arguably the worst. So Murray and Samsonov have been absolutely incredible. I feel for Jack Campbell, but, man, this Leafs team, with it, as soon as Riley went down with the injury, I don't know what happened. I don't know what Keith said. Just be a collective unit. And Mark Giordano, man, give that guy his roses because he has been a unit on the back end.
Yeah, they're just, I'm surprised Schalgren came in. Obviously, no one's expecting to be like a Vezina caliber goalie just coming in like that, but he was able to keep it at least stable, we'll say. But Murray coming back is positive. He hasn't like picked up another injury. He's been consistent right now. Samsonov, I think, is a positive sign that he's able to come back and play that way. But overall, like, do you think Samsonov eventually takes over? You're comfortable with Murray as a starter for now?
I can't believe I'm saying it. I think I'm comfortable with Matt Murray right now as a starter. I think Samsonov, on the one-year deal, I think that's what really benefits the Leafs is the situation of his contract. I think he's just motivated to get paid. So I think he, down the stretch, whenever, knock on wood, you know, Matt Murray has a healthy rest of the way, Samsonov, let's say, plays, what, 40% of the games down the stretch, I think he's going to try his best every single night to just get those stats up, get the wins, just so he can get paid. I know he's going to get paid, maybe $4.5 million a year. I think he's deserving of it. He's 24, 25 years of age now. I just think, Alino, it's just been a perfect, match for both goalies. I mean, Murray wanted to rejuvenate his career, coming back home to Toronto, and Samsonov kind of got kicked to the curb by Washington. So I think they're both motivated. They're both getting the job done. And I think if I'm Washington, I'm shaking my head because you look at Vanecek and Samsonov, the way they've been playing. Yes, Kemper just won a cup, but they're both younger than Kemper. And it looks like in this direction, they might be better individual goalies than Kemper.
Yeah, I would have kept Samsonov with the Washington Capitals. I don't know why they let him go. Like, you could have had a good tandem there with Kemper and Samsonov. You could have even done what Colorado did, split the time. So that one was a weird one, how they let him go, and he didn't really sign for a lot of money. When you look at the Leafs, what they gave him, it wasn't like a $4 to $5 million deal. Like, they took a chance on him for a 1 year, and it's paid off. But you mentioned Campbell there. They dodged a bullet with him. Like, what are your thoughts on just what his season has looked like on a team like Edmonton with McDavid and Draisaitl scoring at the way, that pace that they're doing?
With him, it's never been about his individual game. I think his individual game is fine. I think he's a good, reliable goaltender. I don't know if he's worth the money, obviously, but like for him, it's his confidence. He's a guy that just eats himself alive. He has a bad week, it becomes a bad month. Then the bad month comes, then he has a hot stretch of like a week. And then all of a sudden, he turns the corner. So with a guy like Jack Campbell, it's so hard to really read him. I know he struggled out the gate, but I wouldn't be surprised, Alino. He starts piling up wins, and all of a sudden, you see him get right back up to like a 9-10 save. So I love the story with Stuart Skinner. I think he's going to be a fantastic goalie in the league. We've seen this so many times in the past, guys like Jari, Binnington, Murray. These young goalies come in and they take the starting spot. Jack Campbell is in a tough spot because he's getting paid $6 million. And, you know, the fact that they've just given up on him so soon is concerning. But if there's one guy that definitely is his worst enemy, it's Jack Campbell. We saw it with Reimer in Toronto. When Reimer had a bad stretch, he would eat himself alive. And then all of a sudden, he would turn it around and we would see him smiling and just everything would be going right for him. So I don't know if it's a Leaf thing. When we see it with Reimer, we've seen it with Bernier, we've seen it with Campbell. I just hope he gets back on track because he's just a well-liked type of guy in this league.
Yeah, I agree. And it was a surprise. Like when he first left, you would think like this is a guy that on Edmonton system poached some wins there. You got McDavid, Draisaitl scoring all the time and they're going to get their wins there. Might not always be pretty, might have a bad save percentage, but at least he'll rack up wins. And he lost that number one spot clearly now. So do you think he gets it back at some point, or do you think they're going to have to evaluate their situation at the end of the year?
I hate to say this. I don't see him getting it confidently. Maybe he'll have, again, like a hot stretch where they're kind of in between, like we'll do 50-50, but I don't see him getting the crease back and starting 60% of the games. I just think Stuart Skinner, first, second round pick in 2017. He's got all the tangibles. I think his confidence is at an all-time high. Yeah, he's had a couple stinkers of games, but we all know Edmonton, they're not known to shut other teams down. They're known to get seven on you and torch you. So I think when you look at Jack Campbell, you look at all the instances that he's had to overcome. I still think he's not out of it yet, but I don't see him being the starting goaltender for the Edmonton Oilers for the remainder of the season.
It's going to be interesting to look there. We'll move on now to wrestling, where I was watching SmackDown. Like, Kurt Angle brought the nostalgia back last night. He Love came it. In with the milk truck and just all at the Alpha Academy. Him and Jason Jordan had a nice little father-son moment backstage. Awesome. What do you think of Kurt Angle coming back and having that moment there at the end of SmackDown with the milk truck?
I thought it was great. I mean, you know, it was his birthday too. I thought that was awesome to see. But is he coming back, or is this just like a one-off type of thing? Because if it's a one-off thing, I thought they did it perfectly with Jason Jordan, just bringing back old storylines. And I loved seeing Rey Mysterio tell everyone to sing him happy birthday, because you look back, his first ever pay-per-view match was against Kurt Angle at SummerSlam 02. So it goes back full circle with Kurt and Rey. And, you know, I just love seeing Kurt Angle back with the milk truck. It just brings it back to the 90s, back when I was like 2-3 years old. So I absolutely love it with Kurt. Kurt's one of my favorites growing up. It's good to see him also be a little bit more like leaner, because when he came back in 2018, 2019, feuding with Corbin, he didn't look the greatest. So it's good to see Kurt back.
Yeah, it was good to see him bring back the Team Angle stuff. And yeah, maybe Charlie Haas returns to WWE. Him and Shelton Benjamin can team up. Kurt Angle could be their manager, and they can have another run there. That'd be interesting. But gotta go with Uncle Howdy here, who continues to just piss everybody off backstage. Like LA Knight, poor guy's just in the dressing room. Lights go out, and he does the smartest thing that no one's thought of. Takes out the iPhone and puts a light flashing, and all of a sudden you see Bray in the mask, and they cut to a commercial. What do you think of this rivalry with LA Knight and Bray Wyatt?
I think it's smart, because you kind of can't boo LA Knight. The guy is incredible. I think on the mic, he's underrated. In the ring, he's underrated. Bray Wyatt, this is a great first feud for him, because he hasn't wrestled in a long time. And I think regardless of the outcome, dude, honestly, like, it doesn't matter to me. Maybe to you and maybe to others it does. But to me, this is a win-win. You're exposing LA Knight in a big feud where a lot of WWE fans don't necessarily know him. And now you have this new character in Bray Wyatt. And we all know characters with Bray Wyatt. He hits it out of the park every time. So I just love this Uncle Howdy stuff. It's just so great seeing Bray back with the buzzard. Just that logo, it just brings it back to 2013 when he first came on the scene. I think this feud, honestly, man, I know it's not going to be like a sub-main event worthy, but I think it could get elevated to that status just based off the mic work and everything that they've built into it. So, Alino, call me crazy. I think this might be one of the most intriguing feuds in all of WWE right now, because, first of all, you don't know who the face are. I mean, Bray Wyatt's the face, but I think slowly but surely, LA Knight is in a similar boat as a guy like Elias was, where he's a heel that everybody just kind of starts to gravitate towards and like. So I love both guys involved. I think this feud is going to be an absolute home run for WWE.
Yeah, like LA Knight, it's been fun on the mic there. Just telling about Bray Wyatt to get his puppets and toys. And just the way... like those two going back and forth, their interaction so far. Where he went to the ring and he just slapped him and said, okay, yeah, we're even now. And then he leaves. Like, this is hopefully shaping up to be an interesting matchup at Royal Rumble. But speaking of Royal Rumble, it's the next pay-per-view next month. And already some rumors are going around that The Rock could be coming back for the match, win it, and take on Roman at WrestleMania. What do you think about that idea? And I guess, does The Rock, he has to be advertised. No, you can't just have a guy like that come in and be a surprise and not take advantage of the marketing, right?
Yeah, it sucks, because I've said to you so many times how at the Rumble, you need the surprise factor, but again, you want to market your brand. So it's definitely tough with a guy like The Rock for it to be a surprise. Like, I remember the last time, Alino, I was genuinely surprised was when Jericho came out number two in 2013, where there was like no social media mentioned it, nothing. He just came out and it was like, holy shit, this is actually awesome. I had no idea that Chris Jericho was going to be here. But with The Rock, and you see it on Twitter and all this, I think he's definitely coming out. And I also heard he's probably at entrant number 30. So don't be surprised if at entrant number 30 you hear, if you smell, and he comes out and wins it. I just think, Alino, I'm more old-fashioned. I've never liked the part-timers winning the Royal Rumble. Kevin Owens is in an unbelievable spot right now. He's never won the Royal Rumble. His boy Sami Zayn is basically running WWE at this point. He's carrying it, carrying the bloodline, because Roman Reigns is not there on a consistent basis. I think Kevin Owens or Cody Rhodes are the better options to win the Royal Rumble. Even a guy like Sami Zayn to win it, I think, will get a huge pop. But if you're going to go with The Rock and it's going off against Roman Reigns, it's obviously so marketable. And I think at the end of the day, it would just absolutely elevate Roman Reigns to that godly, like almost Mount Rushmore status of WWE champions. So I think if Roman Reigns faces The Rock at WrestleMania, I think he's retaining. And I think his run is going to go well past 1,000 days. But at the same time, Alino, I want to see him lose to a guy like Kevin Owens or Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, and speaking of Cody Rhodes, there's also like some other rumors I saw on Twitter as I was scrolling, and some of them said that one idea could be Roman versus Rock on night one, Roman wins, and then night two, you have Cody versus Roman. Like, do you think it's a little much, like having that, and like, could some guy be in the background and get the short end there?
I think it's kind of smart because we've talked about it so many times. They got to figure out a way to get a belt off of Roman Reigns, man. Like, he's had both belts. It's great. The Usos have both belts. It's great. You know, they all have the gold and such. But at some point, Raw has to be relevant around a title. They have not had that title for so long. And, you know, you see guys like Austin Theory who have all of a sudden become very serious players in WWE. He looks incredible now, his character changed. Bobby Lashley and Seth Rollins basically feuding over nothing. It's, to me, there has to be a title involved on Raw. It's a three-hour program. At some point in time, whether it's Cody Rhodes, whether it's Seth Rollins, whether it's Lashley, whether it's Lesnar, I think somebody has to bring a title to the red brand. And just because, again, like we've seen so many times, Alino, you can carry a singles feud very well without a title, but it gets to a point where, what's the point of this feud? Is it just, you know, bragging rights? Like, I love the Seth Rollins, Bobby Lashley angle where they're just kind of going at it, and Seth is pissing them off saying Brock is always going to be better than you. But at a certain point, both those guys are deserving of a title. Lashley was a top five wrestler in the magazine this year. Like, people forget that. So I think Roman Reigns, even though he was number one and he's run WWE programming for so many years, gets to a point, Alino, where a guy like Cody Rhodes, a guy like Kevin Owens, they put Roman in a vulnerable spot. They definitely capitalize on it. And I think it just, we don't see it enough, Alino, where the guy that's the top heel has the odds against him. And I think that would be a great narrative, especially at WrestleMania, where maybe Roman goes backstage, he's all angry. What, I have to defend it on both nights? That's ridiculous. And you have a guy say, well, you are the champion with both belts. So this is a predicament you put yourself in. So if that's a narrative they want to go with, I love it. But at the same time, Alino, I don't see it happening.
Another one I was just thinking of here. They can have The Rock come in and have some fun. Like, what if you have him and Cody eliminate each other at the same time at the end? And then instead of doing one night, make it a triple threat. And during the feud, you can have The Rock be kind of like a tweener and just have some fun and go off on both of them and be a heel with Cody and be a face against Roman and like Raw or SmackDown. And I guess, like, if it's going to be a one final run, might as well just have some fun while he's at it. Like, do you think they could go in that direction in a triple threat?
I think it's obviously safe, because how much are you going to rely on The Rock to wrestle like a 20-minute match, like if it was a single match, right? We saw it against Cena in 2018, 2019. He was pretty good at, I mean, not 2018, in 2012 and 2013. He was pretty good at WrestleMania 28. You know, he was doing the kick-ups and such. But you saw at WrestleMania 29, he kind of looked a little bit out of sorts in a singles match. So Cody Rhodes is still, I think, at the top of his game. I think the better option, Alino, in terms of the triple threat would have to be with Kevin Owens if instead of Cody Rhodes. But again, Cody's going to come back and be just pushed into that meaningful feud. Unless, Aldino, you go with Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins part two at WrestleMania, which I think would absolutely just blow the roof off the place. What do you think about that? Because I know a lot of people want to see Cody take the belt from Roman. I think Cody versus Rollins, I don't think that's finished yet.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think that's what they should have done with when they had the titles on the line. I hated the idea of both of them having both titles. Like, I think Seth should have been WWE champion by now. Take one of the titles off Roman, have this reign where right now he's over with the crowd, but keep on doing it until Cody comes back, and then Cody has to go to Seth, and they can do that rivalry out of WrestleMania again for the WWE title, and Cody gets a moment. I think that would make more sense than him going after Seth instead of him going after Roman. I think it would have been more meaningful. But with The Rock in the Rumble, let's say he's advertised, do you think that would be a safe way to maybe have a surprise of Stone Cold or Shawn Michaels or maybe even both?
Yeah, if you're going to have The Rock, I want to say at least two top-tier surprise entrants, whether it's Cena, whether it's Stone Cold, whether it's Shawn, whether maybe you even want to – I know Triple H hung his boots up, but you never know with that guy. He could definitely come out too. I wouldn't be surprised, Alino. We saw John Cena's advertised for the December 30th SmackDown. I do think he's going to be facing Austin Theory at WrestleMania. I just have that feeling that we're going to see Cena versus Theory for the U.S. title at Mania. I don't see Cena winning, obviously. I think that's more of like a passing of the torch moment. But I do think Cena's going to be in the Royal Rumble, and I do think he's going to get one of the biggest receptions of the night. So I do agree with you. I think Stone Cold, what we saw in Mania last year, I think he does have another Royal Rumble in him. Getting him over the ropes might be a little bit challenging, but we saw the spots he took last year. That guy's an absolute warrior.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect match. Like, he doesn't have to wrestle one-on-one. Like, the safest match for him and what he brings is a Royal Rumble. Everyone just wants to see a stunner or him come in and hit a maybe kicks, punches, but when they bring him over, maybe they could have Kevin Owens do it as a way, flip him off at the end, just further that story. But I think what they did a few years ago, I think it was 5 years ago, 2017, they had all the surprises kind of announced, which took away from the match. Like, Roman was in it, and you had the Undertaker moment, but Undertaker was announced, Goldberg was announced, Lesnar, like, do you think they need to go away from that here and just maybe have one guy announced and the rest of the surprises keep for the Rumble?
I think, yeah, if there's one guy that is announced, it should just be The Rock. Maybe Cena, because we know Cena's probably going to say something on the 30th, maybe. But other than that, maybe Stone Cold be a surprise. Triple H may be a surprise. Maybe you even have a guy like CM Punk come out. I don't know. That's just me being very, very optimistic there. I don't see it happening, but Alino, I'm going to say this. I think this is going to be one of the Royal Rumbles where I really want to see a lot of older guys come out. I think it's at a spot now where Roman Reigns is the top guy. We all know that. There's so many options for a challenger. I think Sami Zayn is a guy that could win it. We've said so many times, Alino, I think Sheamus low-key would be an unbelievable story if he won the Rumble. I think you have guys like Braun Breaker who are going to try and get in there and make a name for themselves. Randy Orton, we haven't seen him in a long time. Even Edge, I think, like, there's guys that I really want to see that have been in WWE for a while. And again, nostalgia, I'm usually the guy that's against that narrative. But I think in regards to this Royal Rumble, I'm more on the side of the nostalgia. I want to see Edge come back. I want to see all these guys come out and really show the world that, you know, maybe they have one more last WrestleMania match in them. I mean, Edge won it not too long ago. I don't see him winning, but I think the coolest spot for me, Alina, would be seeing a guy like Cena and Orton going face to face again. I would love to see that again.
Yeah, that'd be something. Orton coming back, he's going to get a huge pop.
Oh, man.
That would be nice to see. But another match that's kind of interesting that, like, even a rivalry and feud, like Brock Lesnar, Bobby Lashley. On Raw, it seems like Bobby Lashley kind of was like a face when he came out. Just the crowd still cheering him on. So maybe just when he's working with Lesnar, he's the heel. But Would you rather see that if they go like the Hell in a Cell match route or cage match route at Royal Rumble, or should they save that match for like night one or night two of WrestleMania?
I think it's going to be a very similar build, Alina, to the Triple H feud with Lesnar and Lashley. Like, you have the first one a single match, you have the next one a single match, then you have like, yeah, maybe like a no DQ. You maybe have Lesnar go over again at the Royal Rumble, and then all of a sudden at WrestleMania, maybe you do what they did with Triple H and Brock Lesnar. No holds barred at WrestleMania, I think, would be a good option. No DQ. Maybe you have a stipulation on the line where Lashley gets a little cocky, or Lesnar gets a little cocky, and Lesnar could say something like, yeah, if I lose to you, Bobby, I retire. So, like, there's always something, some stipulation, I think. Yeah, you know, wishy-washy, rinse, repeat, I get it. But I think if you really want to go do a no-holds-barred match with Lesnar and Lashley at WrestleMania, with Lesnar's career on the line, I think that just ups the ante for that match, no doubt.
I like it. Right now, at least, there's some excitement for them, and we're going to see how all this plays out. But is there anything else in wrestling that you want to touch on here?
I just want to see Sami Zayn get his big break and face Roman Reigns at some pay-per-view. At some point, I want to see Sami versus Roman. Because we saw that hug. We saw Roman's face.
Imagine. They plant the seeds. Everyone thinks we're getting Rock and Roman, and it's Sami Zayn all along. Can you imagine that?
I'm telling you, man, he would get the same pop as Daniel Bryan did, I think. And Kofi Kingston.
And then that pay-per-view, Elimination Chamber, is going to be in Montreal. So keep an eye on that one. Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, they're gods over there. So will be interesting. But Chris, this was fun. Episode 201 in the books. Next week, we'll find out who advanced to the World Cup final, who's the third place at the World Cup, and maybe Morocco, Croatia can do it. Just for the FIFA advertisers. I think that would be fun. But this has been episode 201. We'll catch you next week.